Welcome to Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. My name is Rick Campos, and this podcast is my response to a design community eager to support, share, and inspire one another. We all know that some things simply cannot be taught in a classroom. I believe that our number one resource for information and inspiration is our peers. Join me as I sit down with industry professionals from across the country to discuss their secret to survival in the business of design. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen featuring the industry's top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. As a trade professional, you're eligible for their exclusive rewards program, Perch Premier, where you'll earn credits for every purchase of appliances, plumbing, hardware, and outdoor kitchens. This program is loaded with perks and benefits, so sign up today. Tell them you heard about Perch Premier on Design Biz Survival Guide. This podcast episode is also sponsored by Side Door, the design industry's newest and most innovative digital sales tool, created to empower interior design professionals to elevate your creativity and your profit. Side Door has partnered with our favorite trade brands that we all know and trust to develop a sales platform that will take your e-commerce approach to the next level. Now, you can promote and sell all of your favorite trade brands direct to consumer through your website, blog, or social media, and experience the profit margin that you deserve. Sidedoor is also a powerful purchasing tool for your business, providing access to over 100 trade brands to registered designers for simplified purchasing with no minimums or opening order requirements. Visit onsidedoor.com to learn more and to apply for exclusive trade-only access. Today, we welcome Katie Hodges to the podcast. In this episode, we talk about Katie's unexpected path to her design career and how the encouragement of a friend convinced her to abandon the medical field and explore her true calling, design. We also discuss her construction-forward approach to design, her commitment to her business boundaries, and her strategy to the growth and success of her five-year new design business. Let's get started. All right. Well, Katie, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
We're excited to have you. Ready to talk business of design?
Heck yeah. And you're my first podcast ever.
First podcast ever. Yeah. Okay, we'll be gentle with you.
All right, please.
You came to the right place. Okay, so the way we do this is we start by talking about you a little bit. So, Katie, can you tell us about you, who Katie Hodges is? Just kind of get the listeners filled in on who you are personally, and then we'll dig into the business model.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I grew up in LA. I came here when I was 6 years old with my family from Ukraine. And I've just been kind of a little hustler my whole life. My parents, they had me really young, came here with a six-year-old in their early 30s. And have just always instilled in me, work, 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 make it happen. This is the place to do it. We took you out of Ukraine and poverty so you can make something of yourself. And, you know, Katie as a person just loves to work. And I don't take any opportunity for granted, or I don't waste opportunities. I've always just kind of been this go-getter.
Wow. I mean, that's those are great attributes to have in this industry.
So I've learned it.
You've got to be tireless and you have to be willing to work hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you're based here in Los Angeles?
Yes, in West Hollywood.
Excellent. We're in West Hollywood right now. For the listeners, we're in the Jasper Showroom at the Pacific Design Center. They've been our host today so graciously. So you're based here in Los Angeles as well. Is that primarily where most of your work is, or do you work all over the state or all over the country?
Most of the work is in Los Angeles, but also San Diego, Northern California, and Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And tell us about your, what is your typical project? Like, what is your sweet spot?
I'd say the sweet spot since I started the company 5 years ago has been a renovation and furnishings project. There have been some new build projects that have been amazing, but I really like going into an older home and reimagining it and sort of filling it with new life.
Right, right. And your team size? Do you have a small team, a large team? Are you solo?
Small team. There are three of us full time in the office. And then I have a drafter that I outsource and then a bookkeeper.
Nice, nice. Nice manageable size team.
Yeah, but it's growing, which kind of scares me, but I'm excited.
It can be a little bit scary.
Yeah, but I do see my firm staying quite small.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot to be said for a small, manageable team. Just because, you know, design is so, you know, it's so interactive and it's so collaborative.
Exactly. And also because I was used to doing all of it myself, it's going to be a slow weaning process for me to sort of give up even reconciling credit cards or whatever.
So sure.
It's been a wonderful journey.
Yeah. Delegating can be, it can be hard to part with that stuff, as funny as it may sound.
Right, right.
So, Katie, how did you get into the business? Did you go to design school? Was it something you knew you always wanted to do? Or did you just kind of stumble across it like so many of us?
It's a long and windy road. I was in college to go into the medical field. My parents were very adamant about me having a secure, reliable career, and always just in high school have been sort of forced into the science and the math stuff, but was sort of a closeted artist where I did things on my own that were very creative, and all my jobs when I was in high school were creative and kind of business oriented. And right at the point where I was about to go into my master's program for speech language pathology, I just had this moment where I was like, I don't belong here.
Right.
This is awful. And actually at the time I was a personal assistant for somebody who was a big headhunter in LA. And through her, I was exposed to a lot of different industries I didn't know existed. I grew up pretty poor, definitely didn't even know people hired stylists or designers. My parents were on welfare for a long time, in college, trying to make ends meet. So when I got this exposure to design, and she was building a home at the time, home organization, even her personal stylist, I felt a really strong connection to all of those trades and slowly just began infiltrating everybody's job and telling her, well, actually, I can pick out a better outfit than that, or I don't like that tile that came in. You know, do you want me to go get you another sample?
Uh-huh.
And she saw something in me and pointed it out, like, I don't think you should be going into this master's program. It's a big mistake. You know, let me do some coaching on you and let's really figure out what you want to do. So I took a huge risk then and decided to say no thank you to medical field and started just going on a ton of informational interviews, trying to figure out what I was going to do. Met with executive producers at Fox, met with PR executives, did some internships in styling, PR, catering even. I was really trying to figure it out. And I took an internship in interior design because I was always really interested in design and felt like I had a sort of natural eye for the aesthetic and just totally clicked. I felt like I'd been doing this my whole life. I didn't need a ton of training. It just really suited me.
Right.
And what deficiencies I did have, like AutoCAD, for example, my attitude towards that was like, oh, I got this. I'm going to hire a tutor and we're just going to work at this every night until, you know, I can do it at the level that my fellow assistants are doing it straight out of design school. And not to discredit design school, but kind of didn't need it.
Right, right.
And the rest is history.
Wow, that's amazing. That was a pretty major left turn at a time in your life where entering into a master's program, that's a big commitment. And how fortunate for you to be associated with someone who identified something else in your future and kind of pointed it out to you, you know?
I am forever grateful. She's still one of my dearest friends. And I just get really emotional when I think about that. I was really unhappy with the choice I was making in my career beforehand and gave me a new life.
Right.
Having somebody else see that potential in me. God knows my parents would never admit I was a good artist or something. They'd be like, you are excellent at math.
Stay in medical school.
Biology is very good for you.
That is too funny. Yeah. I think we all need that person, you know. It's funny how we don't always see it in ourselves. Many of us do. Many design professionals say, oh, I've known all along and I saw it in myself. But for some of us, we need that little nudge. So it's great to hear that story of how that happened for you. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So let's fast forward to your current business model. Let's talk about the business of design. As it relates today, right now, you know, we can't not talk about the business of design without talking about COVID and how it has affected our industry. Can we talk a little bit about how your business has responded to COVID and some of the pros and obvious cons associated with how it's impacted our industry?
Yeah, definitely. And COVID, even though it's been around for, I mean, as it is now for a little under a year,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like it's had phases within the year of different on how it's impacted my business. The first wave of COVID, when I remember I got a new office, and the week that I was ready for my employees to start using it was when COVID hit, and I was sitting by myself.
Oh.
Great, glad I got this new office with nobody to share it with. Oh. Projects got put on pause immediately. It was a pretty scary thing. So I pivoted a little bit, went on Instagram and said, hey, whoever needs some e-design or some quick consulting, I've got time. I never do this. Hit me up.
Mm-hmm.
So that kept me afloat. And not just financially, but also mentally, that, you know, I'm able to quickly sort of pivot and start, you know, thinking about other ways to keep my employees employed and you know, maintain my company and not lose it. And after a couple months of doing that, our old clients started kind of coming back and saying, we need to get started. We're this is awful being in our home as it is now. So that was a very welcome return back to normal clients. And after that, it just was very, very quiet. Probably I'd say for 2 months, I had no new inquiries, still doing the e-design thing, which I was really not enjoying. So it was a really scary time because I thought, shoot, the business as I know it, and I've only been in business 5 years, so I didn't really have, I'd say, a 20-year career to compare it to. I still felt very grounded in how things were going. Mm-hmm. I thought, shoot, I'm going to lose this. This is all going to change, and I'm not going to know how to keep up, or I don't know. Anyway, didn't hear from anybody for a while, and then all of a sudden, boom, just craziness. Right when people started realizing this isn't going anywhere, mm-hmm. It's been a huge blessing and a surprise that our industry has done so well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. I mean, that's a common story for many designers. I know not every designer is having that same experience, but it has been very interesting to see the effects of, you know, socially of this pandemic. And like you said, I think it was a kind of panic initially, and then kind of how is this really affecting us? And when I say us, I mean our industry, I mean design and construction. And then that realization of, if we can, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally that trickles down to us, to the design community.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, but it sounds like, much like a lot of interior designers, you had an opportunity to really look inward. You explored e-design. You were probably thinking of another half a dozen ways to pivot your business in case, you know, that didn't respond the way you anticipated. What did you learn about your business at that time?
I learned that we are very good at pivoting. My business has always, of course, been focused on design, but the process and the business has always been a big priority. And when I looked inward, I felt good about how things were going,
mm-hmm.
and didn't want to stop, and felt really proud when I looked at the business when I had all that time, because I thought I was going to lose it. So I'm like, am I going to have enough money? Am I going to have to lay off employees? And I looked and I, you know what? I know what I'm doing. This is actually not too bad. I can't give up now.
Yeah.
Keep innovating, keep pushing, figure it out.
That's excellent. I think my challenge to every design professional this year, every design professional that I speak with on and off the podcast, is to reflect back on all of the things that you learned about yourself and your business during this shutdown, and commit and implement execute those things that you learned about yourself and your business. We had a very lucky, a very great opportunity, you know, to actually look inward and really dig into our businesses in a ways that we typically aren't able to because we're so busy all the time. We're always flying by the seat of our pants.
Yep.
So to have that opportunity and not take advantage of it and not execute and act on all of those things that you were able to develop, I think you'd be doing yourself a disservice. So my challenge to every designer is to really, anytime we get stuck this year in 2021, think back to everything that you learned about yourself and your business in 2020.
Exactly. And to be honest, though, the timing of this reflection couldn't have come at a better time, because in the 2 years prior, mm-hmm. I have been on quite a journey with growing my business skill set, getting coaching, mm-hmm. going to conferences. I've been really dedicated the last 2 years to evolving. So COVID coming at 2020, I was like, you got this. Like, this is what you have been gearing up for.
Yeah, absolutely.
And here it is. What are you going to do now?
There you go.
So COVID was really my implementing, actually.
Nice.
Things that I've been working on for years prior.
Amazing. So Katie, you mentioned that you've been in business for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So prior to launching your own business, what did you do? And I'm curious, you know, what prompted you to start your own business? So I may have skipped ahead. I didn't get enough of your backstory.
Yeah.
Where does the design experience come from? And how did it lead to launching your own business 5 years ago?
Yeah, of course. When I, after I finished my internship, I got offered a job to work as a design assistant here in LA. And that job led to another job. And I was a project manager at a sizable firm, also in Los Angeles. And working for other people was really nice. I got to learn from them. But I've always been extremely independent. And I knew that sort of that 9 till 7, we were like our working hours, 9 to 7 life, with a structure that I didn't always agree with, just wasn't for me. Anybody that I've worked for, that's worked with me, knows I'm super independent. So I started looking for opportunities to freelance, and ended up leaving the firm I was with to do sort of, I called it ghost designing at the time, and mm-hmm. freelancing.
Yeah.
So I had some really great contacts, and I was doing design as a ghost for other designers in LA, which was incredible and gave me sort of the practice and courage to start thinking about starting my own firm. But before I did that, I worked in home staging for a bit over a year at Meredith Bear, which was incredible experience because, gosh, you can't say you've worked hard until you've worked in staging. I mean, our hours were 6 a.m. till sometimes midnight, 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
staging homes. And that was a really incredible experience. And I launched my company straight after that because I felt like I had sort of everything I needed to do it. Why not? I didn't overthink it. You know, like, what have I got to lose?
Yep.
Worst case, I'll just get a job for somebody else.
Uh-huh. That's great. Yeah, I think home staging, you know, we've never really talked about this before on the podcast, and I don't think I've ever actually spoken with a home stager on the podcast, but talk about great experience. The number of jobs that you probably saw install in 1 year. I mean, typically we wouldn't see that in 10 years.
Oh, no. Sometimes I would do 3 jobs in 1 week. And we're talking staging from not just the furniture,
right.
The accessories, the artwork, Q-tips in the bathrooms, towels, everything. I mean, I roll a towel like Nana, like no other. And you have and the teamwork. We had crews of at least 6 people, the movers and the installers helping. I had the best experience, really.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible business model. Now that I think about it, we've had the opportunity of using stagers. In fact, we actually used Meredith Bayer for one of our spec homes in Newport Beach. And I remember seeing the transformation. It was pretty amazing. And I remember having the conversation within our design firm saying, you think we could have done that? And we all collectively said, no, not in a million years.
Yeah.
Leave it to them.
Yeah, exactly. Best experience they ever had.
That's great.
Sure.
That's great. So then you launched your own business and you obviously grew your team. And what was that experience like deciding, you know, okay, is it just going to be me? Am I going to have to branch out and bring more people in? And how do I pace that so that I don't get ahead of myself? I'm sure that was a huge learning experience.
It was a huge learning experience, and it had many moments where I would sort of stumble along the way.
I thought you were going to say cry.
Oh, yeah, that too, obviously. stumble along the way. lot of tears, a lot of alcohol. And there were times where I hired too many people and then I had to sort of go back and figure out, whoa, well, what is each person doing? Let's figure out the structure. But really the biggest, most important move I ever made was hiring somebody full time. Mm-hmm. And this was a little bit over 2.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And since then, things have gotten a lot clearer in terms of building a team. I think it's really easy to say, well, I'm just going to get a freelancer. Granted, I was a freelancer. So my firm was a little bit different than those that I had worked for in the past. But I just realized a freelancer or somebody who isn't committed to my company as much as I am is never going to perform at the level that I need them to perform at. And that was a really big leap of faith for me. I couldn't believe I was going to be responsible for another head, for another household. I'm like, oh my God, this person's, you know, rent relies on me.
Right.
But having had a really successful first full-time hire made me feel like I had air beneath my wings and that I could really do this. Also, I've gotten a lot of coaching on how to build a team, and that's been really important for me. And listening to podcasts, I mean, I'm all about just learning all the time. It never ends with me. I don't know anything, actually, really. I mean, I know some things, but I just always treat it that I have a lot to learn, and I'm in no position to stop.
And the good news is there's so much wonderful information out there.
Yeah.
That's the exciting part about where the design community is today. And I say it over and over and over again, but I'm so excited to be a part of this design community, even though I'm no longer a part of the design community in a design and decorating capacity. Still being engaged in this design community is so exciting because I feel like now more than ever, the community has really rallied and they're willing to share information and put information out there, just like you sharing about growing your team and you know what you learned about having a freelance person as opposed to a full-time person and mm-hmm. you know what that level of commitment meant to your confidence as far as running your business. It's those little nuggets like that that are so valuable to the people that are listening, so I appreciate you sharing that.
Hey everyone, we're taking a quick break to pay the bills and to tell you about our podcast sponsor, Griage Textiles, a collection of micro-batch fabrics for the home. This designer-created line of textiles is grounded in modern simplicity and time-honored tradition. Each pattern is hand-drawn and screen-printed on Belgian linen by artisan craftsmen right here in California. The collection is represented by select showrooms and independent representatives across the country. Visit griagetextiles.com, that's G-R-E-I-G-E, to view the newest collection and to locate your representative. While you're there, be sure to sign up for their designer trade program for perks and benefits exclusive to the design community. Now back to the show.
One of the things I wanted to talk to you about is I know that at some point along the way, you made a commitment to really focus on construction.
Yes.
And to really understand that side of the business, obviously knowing that that is the direction in which your business model was leaning. And so you went above and beyond to create relations with contractors and really kind of understand what they're up against. Tell us about that and how that's affected your business.
Yeah. I think that maybe the left brain side of me gravitated towards construction because it felt really technical. Mm-hmm. And I felt that was a very systematic process. So I wanted to learn more because I needed to also sell myself to clients and show them that I'm a good team player.
Right.
So the best way to do that is to learn more about the construction process and be able to speak that language a little bit better so that you can not only sell your clients on being able to work on those projects, but also have contractors trust you and become comrades with you on the project. There, I think I heard so many times in the past, I didn't experience it, where it would be contractor versus designer, things like that. And that scared the heck out of me because they would pretty much always win. In my case, I was just starting out,
right,
and I didn't know anything. So I really approached it from a standpoint of being curious and respectful to figure out what do you need from me and when to do your job.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of people ask those questions of contractors. Right. And as a result, I have formed some amazing relationships and have had great project results and on time. on budget, things like that, because there are no delays. And so really, there's really not that many more secrets to it. It's just be curious, get to know what do they need? What buttons do you not press? And truly make them feel that you're all in this together, because you are.
Yes.
So, yeah. I don't know if that answered your question.
No, it does. It reinforces a conversation that we have time and time again in the design community about the synergy between, you know, the clients and the designer and the builders and even the architects. You know, it's one big team effort. And when you find yourself on a project, if it's a project that involves all of those people, that's one thing. But even smaller projects, I think the same level of communication is equally as important, whether it's just you and the customer, or it's you and a builder and a client, or you and the client and the builder and an architect, you know, to show that you guys are able to work together as a team is like it tells the client that it's going to be a good experience. It builds trust.
Exactly. And it also builds kind of a barrier between you and between drama with the client.
Yeah.
Because if you are on good terms with your contractor and there's something that goes awry, you want to be the first person to hear about it, not mm-hmm. the client. And we're able to make the client have the most dreamy experience. They don't have to hear about any hiccups along the way, really. So I really encourage everybody to get a timeline with your contractor, care about what they need to get the job done. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really just the secret sauce right there.
When you... of course, I'm going to dig into it a little bit more. I can't help myself. When you when you contract with a client and a builder, obviously you have a meeting with the client, and then obviously you have a meeting with the client and the builder. But do you also have a meeting just you and the builder? Do you take an opportunity to just connect with them and have a conversation without the client involved?
Yes, definitely.
And that's where the expectations are set, probably.
Yes, and I have walked away from jobs where the builder was not open to being a team player and mm-hmm. just didn't care really about what I had to say.
Right.
It's something that has made me lose business, but I'm of the mind that you need to have some integrity, like, and stick to your morals.
Oh, yeah.
And if this is really important to me to have a good builder designer relationship, I'm going to stick with that. Hasn't failed me yet.
Right. Right. And even if the client is disappointed, and even if they stay with the builder and they let you go, I mean, at least you tried to inform, you know, the client that the synergy wasn't there. It may not be a good work experience. So you're just trying to protect them from that. And then the ball's really in their court. You know, if they choose to stick with you and find another builder, that's great. But if they don't, at least you've done your part by telling the client, this is a decision I made and this is why.
Exactly. And these days, though, I'm the one hiring the builder.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been able to sort of flip it and say, well, of course, the client has to approve and has to like them. And mm-hmm. all that stuff is, even if it's an out-of-town project, let me ask my colleagues and see who they've got in the area that mm-hmm. they can refer. And that's my first step. I interview them and then show them to the client.
You make a good point, because that's at some stage along the way, and I know for a lot of designers that are maybe newer to the industry are probably like, we'd never, you know, have an opportunity to vet the builder probably the way you do. But you will. If you continue on this path, it becomes a natural part of what you do. And it's a luxury to be able to have not that control, but that influence over the project. And your clients are naturally going to rely on you for that.
Yeah. And I think it comes from a confidence in your gut feeling, because it's a non-negotiable for me. I will not have a career or lead a life with a lot of drama or a lot of disagreement. It's just non-negotiable, period.
Right.
So I've stuck with that, and because it's non-negotiable.
There you go.
And could I be wealthier had I been more flexible? Right. Maybe. I don't know.
Coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Well, I don't care. It's just not negotiable.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Love it. I love it. Stick to your guns. It's mm-hmm. good advice. It's mm-hmm. really good advice. So we've got some signature questions here on the podcast, and I'm going to start by asking you, what you would consider is the secret to your survival. And when I say that, I mean, like, what's the secret to your success? What is the one thing at this stage that has kept you in the game for this long?
I'd say probably, I'm big on learning and evolving. I'm a very observant person. Everything I do is with intent. So I think because I'm so conscientious and mindful of what I'm doing pretty much at all times, it keeps me in check with myself.
Right.
I don't really let too much get slid under the rug.
Good.
It's all always at the surface.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. And what is the one thing you would say that you know now that you wish you knew then? And when I say then, let's go back to when you started your business.
Mm-hmm. Two most important things. Do not work with clients that you have a bad feeling about. If there are red flags, if you're not looking forward to meeting them, if they just creep you out, whatever it is, don't do it. It's not worth the money. It's going to end badly. Do not do it.
Trust your gut.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And don't be afraid to pass on an opportunity. Because it's trust me, it'll pass on you later anyway. Like, it's just better do it now. And the second thing is to have an amazing contract that is clear and concise and protects both you and the client. Right. I have been burned before.
Right.
And I'm glad it happened early on. Wish I knew then what I know now.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, that's actually, it's a really good point. And no one has ever said that in response to that question, but it is so important. And the way you just phrased it, to protect you and the client, you know, that whole contract thing is a dance. It's very delicate. It needs to protect you, but it also needs to protect the client. It can't feel one-sided. So that is a delicate dance that I think every design professional really needs to invest heavily in if they're not.
Yeah. I mean, it takes a lot of soul searching too. It's no one person can say this is your contract. To really figure out, depending on your fee model, sort of, you know, what is the clearest way to communicate what is expected of me?
Yeah.
That's really it. It's not about, so the arbitration clause is whatever. Like, everybody puts that in. Who cares?
No.
It's exactly what does this fee include, especially if you're on a flat fee.
Mm-hmm.
Super important. It's like writing a book, and I'm constantly rewriting it all the time.
I was just going to say, it's also, I mean, that is a living document, and I think every designer should look at it that way. First of all, you're not going to nail it right out of the gate. You know, there's going to be some trial and error involved. And you should always be revisiting it, because as your business grows, as your business model may change or pivot, your contract has to adapt to that.
Exactly. And each client also, depending on what I observe in them, gets a little bit of a different agreement, where I might have to highlight, you know, a flat fee has parameters as to not exceed the value of the flat fee. Doesn't mean you have me for life, like those kinds of things. Sometimes I have to reword things depending on your audience. Of course, if I'm writing a contract to an attorney, it's very different than if I'm writing it for somebody who's, you know, probably not going to read it with the same scrutiny.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And how would you say that you pay it forward in the design community?
I think a couple ways. One is I've discovered Instagram a couple years ago and have really enjoyed that. And I like being informative on my Instagram and sort of not defending the interior design industry, but showing the audience, you know, what really goes into this and not really BSing a ton about it. You know, I say, okay, well, this is why there's markup on furniture is because of XYZ. And I have a ton of designers write me and say, oh my God, thank God you wrote that, because I think my client's following you. And she doesn't believe in markup or whatever. So I really try to be informative. Sometimes if people say it's too much, I'm like, nope, I want to be transparent. These are the struggles we have sometimes as designers. Or I open up my Instagram to questions and I answer them in a very honest way.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope to one day be an educator in interior design. That's kind of on my vision board long term. And the other way I pay it forward, maybe it's not even paying it forward, but I try to build my own community of designers that we can be very honest with. We can be very honest with each other about our business struggles, or even if we're having a hard time sourcing something, like, or totally insecure about a design sometimes. Like, you know, I don't know if I've started it, but I think I've been over the years sort of curating this group of design friends, and some have met in person, some are just online, that we can really rely on each other and approach one another in a pickle without feeling like you're going to be judged, because we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
All of us.
Right. And we all have those struggles every day. One day you're questioning yourself, you're questioning your design, or you're just challenged. You can't find something that you're trying to source.
Exactly. I mean, if anybody pretends that they've got it all, you know, together and they just wake up with brilliant ideas and their presentations, you know, come together overnight, they're lying to you. And that's not what I'm about at all.
We're calling you out.
Yep. Nope. I know what you do. I do it too.
I know how it's done. Well, Katie, it has been great catching up with you, getting to know you. And I'm glad that you agreed to come on the podcast and share some of your insight with the listeners. For those of us that want to learn more about you, how can we, what is your website? How can we find you on Instagram?
My website is katiehodgesdesign.com.
Okay. Easy enough.
And my Instagram is the same thing, at katiehodgesdesign.
How easy is that? All right. So everyone that wants to learn more about Katie, we know where to go. Katie, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Me too.
I really enjoyed my conversation with Katie, and this is such a perfect example of the type of conversations that prompted me to start this podcast. For starters, how about that major left turn in life from the medical field to design, and some pretty fun gigs in between? Kudos to Katie for listening to her friend's advice and pursuing her creative passion. Do you remember the person that helped you realize that design was your passion? I had a moment when Katie acknowledged that her ongoing commitment to business coaching, conferences, and seminars really prepared her for the challenges that COVID posed for her relatively young business. This reinforces my advice to always be engaged in some sort of continued education for you and your business. I happen to know of a pretty amazing 2-day retreat coming up in October in Palm Springs that may help you check that goal off your list. Check out our website for details. My favorite thing about Katie is her non-negotiable approach to bad clients, ego over teamwork, and plain old drama. There is simply no room in life or business for any of it. I hope our conversation has inspired you to create non-negotiables of your own to protect your business and your sanity. Hey listeners, do you want more? More podcast content? More resources? More programs to help build a stronger business? Then check out Member Vault, our newest addition to the Design Biz Survival Guide platform. Simply visit our website and click the Member Vault tab to learn about all of the benefits of membership, including a complimentary one-on-one strategy session with me. Check it out and join today. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, be safe, be kind, and get out there and inspire.